Hello and welcome to another episode of the Africa Biotech Conversations podcast. I am your host, Adrian Lusa, and today we are taking the podcast over to Kampala in Uganda, and we'll be speaking to Ian Peter Busowa, who is the Science Policy and Communication Officer of SynBio Africa. Ian, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for making time to join us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Awesome. And today we're talking about SynBio Africa because it is a very interesting organization that is specifically looking at synthetic biology, and we'll come to find out why. And they also have some upcoming events that could be of interest to the typical audience of this podcast, which is the reason why I asked Ian to stop by, hang around with us, so we can get to know a little bit more about SynBio Africa, about synthetic biology, and a few other topics that we are going to be talking about. So yes, like I mentioned, Ian is the Policy and Communications Officer at SynBio Africa, but his background is as a biotechnologist. He has over 6 years of experience in science communication, science policy advocacy, grassroots mobilization, and project management. He has previously worked with various organizations such as Science Stories Africa, Uganda Biosciences Information Center, Uganda's National Agricultural Research Organization, Bioeconomic Coalition of Africa, and the International Genetically Engineered Machine. Ian is also a Jingo BioWorks Inaugural Public Policy Fellow and 2022 Breakthrough Institute Generation Fellow, where he has researched extensively on the regulation and commercialization of biotechnology across Africa. He has expertise in the bioeconomy, biosafety, and biosecurity, and has presented on these topics at various national and international forums. He currently leads the policy and communication efforts of SynBio Africa's Global Catastrophic Biological Risks Initiative, which aims to increase Africa's capacity to prevent and manage global catastrophic biological risks. He has a bachelor's degree in biotechnology from Makerere University in Kampala, as well as a Master of Science in Biotechnology from KIIT University in India. So, Ian, that is quite an accomplished profile that you have. And I'm so glad that you decided to honor our invitation, because I needed someone to come in as a specialist in science communication to break down some of the topics of biotech that could be relevant for the layperson, people who are not so educated or who don't have a background in education around biotech, but to understand how relevant biotech is for us all. And that's why I'm so glad that you have that profile, that you agreed to talk to us. But before we get into the topic that I wanted us to discuss, I would like for you to tell me a little bit more about the current organization, SynBio Africa. How did SynBio Africa come about, and what role is SynBio Africa trying to play on the continent and for the industry?
Yes, thank you very much, Adrienne, for the introduction and for the question. SynBio Africa is a community of stakeholders in synthetic biology across the continent. These stakeholders include scientists, policymakers, we have students, academicians, civil society, and the general public that simply is a fan of biotech and synthetic biology. And how it started is that the founder of SynBio Africa back in 2018, Geoffrey Otim, was invited to a conference in Singapore about global health security. And while there, he got introduced to a number of stakeholders in synthetic biology, those running synthetic biology companies and members from the IGM, which is the International Competition for Synthetic Biology. So after that conference, when he came back to Uganda, at the time he was a master's student at Makerere University. So after that conference, when he came back to Uganda, he formed the very first IGM team from East Africa. And this team went on to compete in the IGM competition in Boston, USA at the time. After the team competed and they got used to more actors in the field of synthetic biology, they sought to create a community around this new thing they had discovered, this new technology they had heard of. And so they got back to Makerere, they mobilized fellow students, mobilized other scientists, and together they formed what originally was called SynBio Uganda. However, it being the only community of synthetic biologists at the time, they got overwhelming interest from other countries to be part of this community. And so they morphed into what you now call SynBio Africa. And since then, they've been operating as SynBio Africa. So over the years, they've been engaged in a number of activities. They have worked on projects, scientific projects, including working on bioplastic degradation, working on cosmetic products, and other various applications of synthetic biology. The official launch of SynBio Africa was back in 2021, when we organized a very first international synthetic biology and biosecurity conference in Africa, which was in Kampala, Uganda. And that brought together over 100 stakeholders from about 40 countries in Africa who came to basically discuss what synthetic biology is, what are the efforts Africa has taken so far in synthetic biology and biosecurity, and also discuss plans for the future. So since then, Africa went on to organize a training for bioinformatics, because that actually skill stood out a lot in the conference. People liked the skill, but there was very little capacity. So we conducted Super 2 trainings and trained 40 scientists in bioinformatics. That was early last year. Following that up was the Global Catastrophic Biological Risks Initiative, which started in April 2022. And the aim of this initiative is to build capacity in biosecurity in Africa. With that initiative, we have been able to train over 200 biosecurity stakeholders across 30 countries in Eastern, Northern, and Western Africa. And next month, we'll be in Southern Africa to train more stakeholders. So that briefly is what we've done so far. Our vision, SynBio Africa, is to advance the role of synthetic biology in addressing the challenges of our time, especially here in Africa. And so the activities we do now and we intend to do in the future look at how we can build capacity of African scientists, African stakeholders to use this technology, at the same time safeguard against its risks through building capacity around biosecurity. So that briefly is the history of SynBio Africa and what we are.
Yeah, it gives a lot more clarity around the organization, because we have quite a few, you know, communities of researchers in Africa specializing in different niches where they meet, they collaborate on research projects and do publications. But I took interest in SynBio Africa because it seems to be very application driven. And you mentioned you do projects within industry as well, and you involve other stakeholders like policymakers. And so that whole aspect of playing a role, building an ecosystem to support a technology was what really made me think it would be great to have you and to unpack more around this technology. But maybe we can take a step back and just break down for someone who doesn't know what synthetic biology is. What is synthetic biology? And they're like subtopics, because you've mentioned something like bioinformatics. Who can identify as a synthetic biologist? You know, yeah.
Yes, thank you very much. So to better explain what synthetic biology is, I'd like to briefly highlight how biotechnology has kept evolving. We've been utilizing biotechnology since the start of human life, from basic things as creating mm-hmm. local alcohol, just fermentation. That's biotechnology at work.
Yes.
And over time, as we become more knowledgeable and understand our surroundings better, we've evolved what applications use biotechnology for. So previously, it was just making alcohol, things like that. And now we are moving into more advanced applications. So synthetic biology combines mm-hmm. the traditional biotechnology with computer engineering principles. And the result okay. of this is a more efficient and much cheaper process of achieving the same result. An example would be like, imagine the scientists now have a superpower to make living things do cool things. And by so doing, create very, very interesting applications. Imagine you could direct mm-hmm. bacteria and yeast to make a special, I call it a special juice that can run cars. And this, mm-hmm. in the process, helps us replace the fossil fuel, the gasoline that's traditionally used. And in so doing, we're making better use of nature sustainably, but at the same time, we're reducing the negative impacts of the fossil fuels on the climate and the environment. That's one application. There are things mm-hmm. we've been able to do with synthetic biology. The example I like giving people, given that you've just come out of the pandemic, is that traditionally developing mm-hmm. a vaccine, let's say the polio vaccine, would take over 10 years to get a vaccine to the patient. Mm-hmm. However, when COVID happened in 2019, towards the end of 2019, it took us about slightly above a year to get a vaccine to the patient. And it's not because mm-hmm. it's not because maybe lots of things have changed. No, what basically has improved is the efficiency of, first of all, screening the vaccines, what candidates will work, knowing what proteins will react well with this kind of virus that we are trying to handle. But at the same time, it also mm-hmm. made it easier from the side of the policy, in the sense that the regulatory process now took much shorter. So such feats in the field of medicine, for example, are possible by the fact mm-hmm. that now scientists are able to do what they have always done, but more precisely. They're able to tell what kind of protein mm-hmm. they need to design for particular disease without going through thousands of trials of try and error to see what protein works. So that time is saved, resources mm-hmm. are saved, and also the efficiency of the vaccine is improved. That's one practical example I would give. The other cool example I found of how synthetic biology has been applied. We have now what you call plant-based foods, but most especially plant-based mm-hmm. meat. People who have traveled to places mm-hmm. where this product is, you may have come across the Impossible Burger. This is a burger that has meat in it. The meat looks like meat, but the meat is made out of plant material and not from the animal source. So in so doing, we are still able to enjoy the delicacy of a burger, but we are also reducing the impact of livestock farming on the environment and also mm-hmm. improving animal welfare. Those are some of the cool applications of mm-hmm. synthetic biology. And synthetic biology is bound to find use in almost each and every industry, from medicine to agriculture to transport, to all other aviation, all other industries could have mm-hmm. something that could be improved through synthetic biology. So that briefly is what synthetic biology is about.
Okay, that was very helpful. What I noted is the underlying definition that you gave and the very practical examples that synthetic biology is traditional biotech combined with computer engineering. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. So for there to be synthetic biology, we also need the digital aspect. And would you say that the advances in the field of synthetic biology are going hand in hand with the digital transformation?
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. So I'm saying this because a lot of people are keeping tabs on the effect of digital transformation in other fields, like in finance, like in, I don't know, typical technology, software development, and all of that. So I think it's useful to highlight that the digital transformation also is having an impact on biotechnology, by, like you say, improving precision, efficiency, life cycle of product development and things like that. So I think it's really cool that you highlight that, because it seemed to someone not within the field that synthetic biology is just one little aspect of biotechnology. So, but from your definition, it is an evolution of biotechnology. Is that correct?
Yes, yes, it is.
Okay. See, I'm learning. All right. Thank you so much for... Yes?
For those who are listening, that could be science. That could give you an example. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, when I'm...
Yes.
I'm having several samples I need to prepare. I'll use my hand to carry one element from one, maybe test tube to the other. And for if it's maybe like 1,000 mm-hmm. samples, it would take me maybe several days to do this. However, this is a very manual process and very repetitive that could easily be performed by a programmed machine. And that's what now the developers mm-hmm. have done. But for processes like those that aren't necessarily technical, it's just more manual labor. Just have a robotic arm do that. First of all, that to reduce your human mm-hmm. error in terms of transferring the samples. But at the same time, to save you a lot of time. You're saving up to 3 days of work in just an hour of robotic arm work. So that's how efficient this whole process has come. It's still transferring chemicals or material, but mm-hmm. much faster and more efficiently. Yeah.
Yeah, you can tell me about that so much. You can tell me all day about that, because I did my PhD in the days where we didn't have robots. and I was doing drug discovery. So I know a lot about pipetting and sleeping in the lab, watching over bacteria,
yeah.
taking out samples to plot the growth curve. Something that you could literally just program into a computer, let it sit there in a what is it? What do you call this now? A processor where you grow the bacteria in. Yeah. Anyway, I'm just seeing like how far we've come.
Yeah.
And it's so exciting to know that this is all coming into Africa. I know, and maybe you can throw some light on this, seeing that you are a community and you're operating across Africa. What is the distribution of synthetic biology in terms of capacity across Africa, both in human capacity, but also in infrastructure? Where are the hotspots? And yeah, can you maybe give us a picture on that?
Yes, in terms of our community distribution, we have members in every African country. But internally, our structure mm-hmm. is that we have ambassadors for each region. We have an ambassador for the Eastern region, for the Horn of Africa, for West Africa. And so these ambassadors coordinate the members in those countries in that region. But in terms of distribution of the technology itself, at the moment, the technology is concentrated largely in South Africa and Egypt. Mm-hmm. However, in the aftermath of the COVID-19 pandemic, capacity is being grown at a very fast pace in other regions of the continent. So we are now mm-hmm. having partnerships bringing synthetic biology to Uganda itself, to countries mm-hmm. in West Africa, Senegal, Sierra Leone, Nigeria, Ghana, and other countries across the continent. Capacity is still mm-hmm. low. Fortunately, we have the scientists, yes. We have the scientists who have been trained. But the scientists mm-hmm. we have that are trained in these areas are still, I would call it, are still doing things like you've just described previously. Of mm-hmm. the experienced scientists in biotechnology, but not yet up to the advancement of synthetic biology. And so the partnerships mm-hmm. we are seeking out for to bring to the continent are those meant to make the scientists' life easier, getting the science they already have, the knowledge they already have, but saving them time, saving them resources, mm-hmm. and also making their work more efficient. So that's what we are having. But mm-hmm. we are having a number of companies coming up to open up vaccine plants in Africa. That's an example of how synthetic biology is growing here. We're having partnerships coming up in diagnostics through the Africa CDC and other partners on the continent to improve the diagnostic capacity of the reference labs in the various regions of Africa. And so mm-hmm. I'm positive that in the years to come, we shall get to a point where we can effectively compete the global bioeconomy and sell our biotech products beyond the borders of the continent.
Would you say that it is synthetic biology can offer some sort of a leapfrog effect for Africa to get competitive within the field of biotechnology with the rest of the world, given that when it goes digital, then there won't be so much need to invest in infrastructure, just the essentials, if that makes any sense? I'm just imagining the possibilities that yes. Instead of building big, you know, plans, all you need to do is train a scientist, give them the right tools and computer systems, and they can bypass a whole lot of steps and then just get to the final. Would you say that is something to take advantage of in Africa?
Yes, we shall have the leapfrog effect that you've described. However, even in synthetic biology, there will be need for some hardware, what we call biofoundries. An example is when you visit a car assembly plant, typically, it is still a big warehouse, but with fewer people and doing things that actually require their expertise. So we still have the hardware, but now most of that is just robotic arms moving pieces of cars from one point to the other and things like that. So the hardware is still there, but the human capacity is saved for things that actually require their expertise and input. Unless the things are repetitive. So in the case of synthetic biology, we would need to now set up what you call bio. But these biofoundries, we mainly have, for example, that may be a platform that transfers samples from one place to the other. The other is monitoring the growth of the samples and taking data in real time, things like that. So we still need the physical structure, but that structure wouldn't require people who have gone to school to a level of a PhD spending a whole week pipetting samples. I feel like that is underutilizing their value. So that's something that's replacing with this technology. What I see happening in case of investment and also the market is that Africa has very brilliant scientists. That's something I'm very proud of. We have people who are very brilliant. Second is that we have very unique challenges with very unique solutions, and we've been heavily endowed with all sorts of biodiversity to create solutions to challenges like this. So what we need is to equip our scientists with tools like synthetic biology to make their development work faster so that they can move on to bigger and bigger challenges. So that we aren't solving a problem of, let's say, creating a vaccine for, I'd go maybe it's still polio, taking 10 years. Something that could take maybe 3 years if you use synthetic biology. So that now polio is kicked out and move on to the next challenge. That's the kind of vision I have for biotechnology and synthetic biology in the African continent.
And I think that is the leapfrog that I was trying to describe, because if we have that technology, like you said, we stop worrying about basic time-consuming processes and we focus on solving real problems, being innovative, and catching up with the rest of the world. So I foresee that, like you said, we're training our scientists very well, brilliant, they're competitive. You go in any major lab, company, wherever in the world, you would see African scientists really shining. But then the infrastructure, the other issues, energy and all whatnot, some of those things hold us back. And I'm just trying to see, like, with digital, with AI, with machine learning, all those things coming together, if we have the investment in those foundational, you call them what, biofoundries, right?
Yes.
If we have the investment in those things, then it puts us on a faster track to catching up in terms of scientific development and even just the bioeconomy. Okay, so I think we have belabored that point, and thank you for making me feel really, really old because things that I used to do like how many years ago, now are being done by robots. It's exciting, and also, I can't bring back those years, so I'm just going to make peace with that. So tell me, no, seriously, I had an extra year for my PhD. So instead of 3 years, I did my PhD in 4 years. And I wouldn't tell you how many of those years were spent pipetting and regrowing and growing bacteria. Just
I can imagine, yeah.
Let's leave it there. And okay, so tell us a little bit more about, so no, that before we get to talking about the conference, you brought up something about biosecurity, because again, the layperson, when they hear all these things about scientists manipulating bacteria, scientists, you know, doing things in the lab that used to take 10 years, now it takes 1 year. First of all, there's issues around trust. The general public, because they don't know what scientists are doing and the evolution of science over time, they don't trust. And that's something that you probably noticed during the pandemic with the vaccine hesitancy. It was because people didn't understand, like, why are you giving me a vaccine that was just developed in like a year?
Yes.
Whereas I know that vaccines don't just come out like that. You know, they have to go through this long process, these checks and balances to make sure that it's safe for human consumption. But now I think that, and also the risks, because there are real risks of, you know, interfering with natural processes and nature. So tell me a little bit more about the efforts that are coming together to balance also checks on this risk.
Yes, thank you very much. Before I come to the risks of synthetic biology, I would like to, first of all, get the listener to appreciate the presence of risk in every technology. I could give an example for our case in Uganda. When electricity was introduced in Uganda, the claim was that it was draining blood out of people. And for a long time, that belief existed. Yeah? But now, decades later, down the road, we are enjoying all the benefits of electricity and having this source of energy. The same thing happened to phones. Yeah, when the phones came in Uganda, one, first of all, the technology was still slow. Two, people didn't have trust in the technology. And lots of issues existed about what the impacts of this technology would be. However, still, like just like with electricity, decades down the road, almost everyone has a phone. It could be a smartphone or the button phones, but still a phone, and they can make calls to any place in the world. Despite those benefits, still, we recognize the risks. And so all these technologies, they are checks and balances to ensure that whereas humanity enjoys their benefits, there are still safeguards against potential things like exposure to radiations from the phones or the crystallines and things like that. There are all sorts of warnings, distances from the power plants, all those measures. And so the same thing comes to biotechnology and synthetic biology for that matter. That whereas there is surely immense potential for benefit, we have to be cognizant of the potential risks that could come from intentional or unintentional misuse of the technology. And so what partners have done in this case is to put in place several measures, several checks and balances. I could give an example. Before a scientist starts working on research on let's say genetically engineering, could be bacteria or any other organism to derive special application, they have to go through a step-by-step process to get approvals. One, to determine the safety of the environment they're going to be operating in, and also the relevancy of the project they want to work on. Who are they going to work with? Who is supervising the work? How often do they report on their work? When do we have site visits and things like that? So all of these checks and balances are intended to ensure that whereas we are looking at the vision of the benefit, we are also cautious in terms of what we do. And so measures include policies. For example, we have biosafety laws in several countries. We have regulatory agencies, those regulating research. And also we have the agencies regulating import and export of these biomaterials. We have systems monitoring online as people purchase, let's say, sequences and primers and things like that online. We have systems monitoring to basically flag items that could be potentially used for harm. those are flagged and, you know, they do a background check and things like that. Some countries have gone ahead to establish what they call select agent programs, whereby for research on things, let's say, the Ebola virus. Yes, we want to do research to develop a vaccine or a therapeutic material for Ebola, but in so doing, we authorities have to make sure you aren't trying to do harm. And so as you do that, there are all sorts of measures in terms of what kind of laboratory are you working in. There are different levels of these things, depending on the risk of the material you're working with. There are checks on the background. Do you have any criminal record? It could be related to biotech or not, but in case any of these things come up, you may be stopped from conducting such kind of research. So in brief, what I'm trying to inform the listener about is that in synthetic biology and for any science, there are various measures put in place by authorities, by the scientific communities, to ensure that whatever they are doing isn't harmful to the humans and to the environment. And so an example, for example, I would say, in the case of Uganda, we have the National Council of Science and Technology, that whose main role is to monitor research from conception of the idea to making the product. And this is mandated to stop at whatever stage and ask for background checks and all the things. And internationally, we have several treaties agreed to by several countries that prevent now international transfer of dangerous materials, that prevent creation of weapons using biotechnology. We have a biological weapons convention that prevents that. And there are repercussions in case someone is suspected to do that or is found to do that. So there are several ways that the community and authorities are ensuring our safety, but at the same time ensuring that in so doing, enabling us enjoy the benefits of these technologies.
Yeah, it is reassuring to know that there's all of that put in place, and that it's, and am I correct to say it's not just incumbent on a country, but that there are also international bodies that oversee that people comply. Okay,
sure.
Great. Okay, so coming back to the technology, I wanted us to maybe talk a little bit. Who is your typical SynBio Africa member? Who can be a member of SynBio Africa?
My answer to that is anyone. All you need is a passion for the technology. Because you could be, as I explained earlier, we have scientists, so those are actually doing the technology. We have policymakers. Those are simply interested in how they are, should I say, citizens or constituents will benefit from this technology. But at the same time, they're also here to understand how they can better regulate the technology and prevent against harm. We have the media, whose role is to inform the public about what's happening in this area. We have civil society, whose role is to check government and check people in authority to ensure they are doing the right thing in regulating the technology. We have well-wishers who simply are in love with the products of biotechnology. They love the impossible burger, they love the vaccines, they love the insulin hormone, and all of these various possibilities that are now possible with biotechnology. And some are just students, some others are farmers, depending on your passion, really. You could be passionate about various aspects of synthetic biology. As long as you have the passion, you can join us as a member.
That is very informative, and hence we can now talk about your upcoming event, which is the second of its kind. It is the second International Synthetic Biology and Biosecurity Conference for Africa, taking place this year. So I think you've answered the question about who should attend, but how do people go about attending or signing up for this conference? What are the different options for participating in the conference and the dates?
Great. Dates for the conference are 12th to 14th of July this year. And how you can join or register to join, we have a link online with various categories. We have students, then we have a price for Africans, and then for non-Africans, is the community beyond our continent. So you can visit the website of Sinbad Africa, or check out our social media platforms on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook. Simply search for Sinbad Africa and you'll be able to get all the latest updates regarding that conference.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And then we're going to take it to you as a biotechnologist, and especially within your role as a science policy communicator. I know that some of the things that say the entrepreneurs, because this podcast specifically was designed to promote the industrial or the commercial application of biotechnology. So to go beyond research and academic discussions to actually making products and solutions that solve problems or add value to life, not just for Africans, but also for global consumption and for biotechnology to really reach its full potential in solving problems, in providing solutions, in improving the well-being of Africans. I think some of the guests, previous guests, have brought up policy challenges. There's some challenges on the continent in there's lack of transparency. Some areas are not, documented. The policies are not known. But I wouldn't know more about that. I think you are the right person to maybe tell us a little bit what are some of the policy gaps that you see on the continent, or maybe answer it in another way to say what would be the ideal situation policy-wise for biotechnology to really achieve its full potential on the continent. Take it away.
Thank you. In terms of policy gaps, the thing is that many political governments across the continent have been talking, in speaking, they have showed support for synthetic biology and advancement of biotechnology and the bioeconomy. And that has been very vibrant and outstanding, especially after the effects of the pandemic. However, the policy gap is that to an investor who would like to invest in such countries, the word of mouth alone isn't guarantee enough that actually political will exists. So for many of these countries, what we are trying to advocate for is for them to make their political will and their support in writing. And our government puts political will in writing is by actually passing a policy and putting in place a policy framework that supports investment in this field. What this policy could look like, for example, it could be, first of all, just getting the biosafety framework right. Having a biosafety law in place to regulate this biosafety and biosecurity framework, right? Secondly, putting in place investment incentives for investors in biotechnology. This has been done for many other industry sectors. For example, in Uganda, we have benefits for those who want to invest in tourism, those investing in manufacturing, and things like that. So governments putting it in a policy could be a guideline or a new role in the various related trade policies. That if you're an investor in biotechnology, it's the kind of benefits you'd expect from a country. Maybe a given tax cut or tax holiday, maybe would give you this and that. In Uganda, for example, some manufacturers, government goes as far as giving them space to put up the warehouses. And so giving them, maybe exempting them from taxes on key inputs in the industry. So such written and clear policy frameworks and guidelines would go a long way in building confidence in the investors and also in the scientists that there's actually existing political will for work and investment in biotechnology. That's one. The other thing that this policy support could look like is in terms of trainings. Many countries have government scholarships for various fields and courses, depending on government priorities. And so what we're advocating for is for governments to include relevant courses to synthetic biology on that list of courses that are supported through could be grants or funding for scholarships or maybe fellowships abroad to benchmark and learn better skills and come back and apply them, things like that. So if governments can do that towards building capacity and able to tell investors that actually our scientists are up to speed with how the industry is advancing, that would also improve the situation a lot for us. The third is the funding itself in terms of investing in industry. Governments take on various ways of investing in nascent industries. One of the things that people need to understand is that traditionally, governments have played key roles in especially supporting the starting of what I would call very innovative industries, but at the same time, high-risk industries. At the current stage, to many investors, biotechnology looks high-risk, partly because they have limited knowledge about how to de-risk the sector. And this is a gap that could be effectively addressed by government by funding, investing in biotech startups, or maybe biotech incubation centers or incubation hubs. Enable these brilliant scientists just come and innovate away various applications of synthetic biology. That's something that governments are in position to do, and it's also go a long way in attracting private investment. The other things that we need is that in synthetic biology, given the rate at which innovations come up, intellectual property rights come in very actively. Most of the value of these products depends on the exclusivity of the innovations. For example, if I come up with a formula of a new fragrance for perfume, for me to be able to charge a good value in the market, I need to ensure that only I have access to that. Because there's breach of that kind of exclusivity, there are repercussions to the people breaching that kind of understanding. And that is made possible by having in place the intellectual property laws and also a clear framework of how those that breach the law are brought to account. That's something that would go a long way in boosting innovation and investment in this sector. So briefly, those are some of the policy challenges that governments in Africa and other policymakers thinking about this space could take on to improve the prospects of this technology on the continent.
Yeah, and while you were saying that, I couldn't help but reflect back on something that you mentioned when I asked about the hotspots of biotech, or even to be more specific, biosynthetic biology in Africa. And it seems to me that the hotspots follow where the policies are: South Africa, Egypt. So it seems that you're right in terms of investment, in terms of trust, in terms of, you know, putting in place incubators and all of that. It does go a long way. For being in South Africa, I can tell you already that there are so many prototypes coming out that in the next few years will be on the shelves coming from these industries. So it's just to give heed to those who are still, you know, a bit slow to catch up in that the science is there, but it will not act on its own. It will not act in a vacuum. It needs certain enabling factors to thrive. Yeah. I want us to talk about something that is very close to my heart, and that is women in STEM, and in this case, in synthetic biology. When you add, it's already hard enough biotech, you know, looking at the gender disparity within the industry. And now when you add the complexity of digital to it,
yeah,
I can only imagine. I don't know the stats, but I can imagine that it will further skew the scale in favor of men. Are you guys doing anything to ensure that women are coming along on this journey? And if so, what?
Well, there are a number of things that can be done here, but in terms of what we are doing at the moment is that we are having a number of proposals coming up within our community to support more involvement of women in the fields of synthetic biology and biosafety, biosecurity. So far, the current stage is that right now they're getting the statistics to understand how many are involved, what's the percentage, what gaps are they encountering, what's causing the low numbers and the disparities in terms of representation. But in terms of solutions, I believe that what has been done in other fields, in other sectors, also applies to synthetic biology. For example, things like dedicated scholarships and training opportunities for women, they've been established. They have established mentoring and networking opportunities for women, whereby the few that have been able to get to these places are able to pave the path for more more women and girls to take on science-based careers, and also creating influence policies that address unconscious or unconscious biases and discrimination in workplaces and various programs, and also creating adaptive and flexible working arrangements for women. For example,
very important.
sometimes the argument for equality comes in, but we need to recognize that there are some situations that are unique to women. For example, from the cases I witnessed, motherhood affects the kind of career engagement of women. And so having working arrangements and programs that take into consideration these unique situations and don't disadvantage women for experiencing these kinds of natural processes would be very key in, one, us capitalizing on their brilliancy, but also making it easy for them to pursue science-based careers. So that's some of the things that can be done to have more women in this field. And the many other interventions that have been done in the field can also more or less apply to synthetic biology.
Thank you so much for indulging that biased question. Yeah, so tell me, in your opinion, just looking at biotechnology and the landscape in Africa, are you seeing some trends? I mean, I'm sure synthetic biology is top on the list, but are you seeing any other trends impacting biotechnology in Africa? And what are some of your predictions of how that will evolve?
Yeah, I think my discussion and answer to this question, I'll focus on the positive trends. One of them is the increased focus on addressing health challenges, especially at the back of the pandemic. Reason being that governments saw the disadvantage of relying on foreign manufacturing capacity to address your local health challenges. People had the money to procure vaccines, but they had no supply because of the limited supply, basically, in the global market. And so right now, governments and other development partners are having an increased focus to actually building national and local capacity or regional capacity to addressing these challenges, which creates a very big opportunity for synthetic biology to be utilized. Secondly is the growing advocacy around climate change. Synthetic biology, one of the biggest selling points of its applications is actually its friendliness with nature, in terms of being a way of ensuring that humans still prosper and develop and enjoy the more comfortable life they are striving for, but in so doing, also liberating nature, ensuring that nature is not compromised. So some of the applications, like, for example, genetically modified foods that are able to either thrive in places with less nutrients or maybe are resistant to pests and diseases that would alternatively maybe require application of herbicides and pesticides that have harmful effects to the environment, and very many other applications of synthetic biology in terms of ensuring sustainability. So the conversation on climate change creates a lot of opportunity for biotechnologists to propose solutions that are not only cheaper to work on, but at the same time are sustainable because of their friendliness with nature. That's one of the trends that I find quite promising. The other that I find quite promising is the advances in genomics or in what I would call genetic modification. The advances include one that is now cheaper to do things like DNA sequencing. That the cost of doing DNA sequencing has reduced immensely in the past 10, 20 years. And that has been made possible by the advances in synthetic biology. That means that, one, with the same amount of resources, you get more work done. Investors will realize more value for money, which makes it easier for them to invest in this field. So this kind of advances, and it's still going on, will make it easier for synthetic biology to provide solutions to the challenges of today. The other promising trend that I see, from my point of view as someone in policy and partnerships and communication around the bioeconomy, is that there's now greater collaboration and partnership around this aspect. We have more companies recognizing the viability of investment in Africa as I told you earlier, we're now having vaccine companies opening up production plants here in Africa. We're having partners partnering with our laboratories to grow their capacity to diagnose disease and all things like that and to do research. So these partnerships make it possible for, make it possible and kind of viable for other actors to come and also get involved in this field. So those are some of the trends that quickly come up to my mind when I think about the future being brighter for Africa and synthetic biology.
Yeah, it is indeed. It is. I am so excited to be part of these times and seeing all of these evolutions and witnessing the brilliance and just sheer resilience of humans, you know, in the face of some of the worst challenges. So it'll be really great to you know, continue witnessing all the benefits that biotechnology brings, or technology in general brings. My goal is really to get people to give importance, the well-deserved importance to biotechnology, right up there with any other technology, because I think there's a lot of focus and a lot of hype around other technologies. But given the impact, it's not just a nice to have, you know, the impact that biotechnology has, or the potential impact that it has on our well-being, the well-being of the planet, it's something really worth heralding and hammering on and bringing on board as many people hands on deck as possible. So in so saying, it's inviting as many people who are curious about biotechnology, curious about, you know, discussions on policy, on biosafety, biosecurity, potential for the technology, to quickly register for the conference that will be taking place in Kampala, Uganda. Will there be a virtual attendance opportunity, or it's in person?
Yes, there will be a virtual opportunity to attend.
Okay. So yes, please register and make sure that you keep tabs on your calendar and be part of the discussion, be part of the movement, be part of the community that is working to make biotechnology and especially synthetic biology a reality in Africa. On that note, thank you so much, Ian, for taking time to really break down these complex topics. Thank you so much for your expertise in communication and in policy and in technology to bring all these insights to everyone, you know, no matter their state of understanding of biotechnology and synthetic biology.
Thank you for hosting me, for the great questions and stories. Yeah.
Awesome. And on that note, thank you to our loyal listeners, to our loyal audience. We'll stay tuned on this podcast. Please do share if you found this useful, if you found this interesting, if you found this hopeful. Please share it with your network. Subscribe so you can know when we release the next episode with another interesting guest talking about Africa, talking about biotechnology. I've been your host, Adrian Lusa, and today I was joined by Ian Peter Busola of SynBio Africa. Thank you so much. Keep well. Bye-bye.